This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, is...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, today, we are going to be talking about one of my favorite Voyager episodes, Course Oblivion. But Suzanne, doesn't it feel a little bit like we're podcasting with one hand tied behind our back?
No, I feel like I'm missing a limb. So it's a little more than that. You know, because the hand tied behind your back, you still have that hand. I'm missing an arm. And part of a leg.
There is a piece of us that is missing. But as they say in show business, the show must go on.
I miss you, Kay.
We do miss you, Kay. But as we promised last time, Suzanne and I are back with what we are calling To the Journey version 2.5.
It makes us sound like some sort of iOS update. Is that what we are?
Click here to install the latest version of To the Journey. So without a doubt, To the Journey is going to be a little different. We won't have Kay here to keep us in line with her witty retorts. But we're going to keep the same spirit of To the Journey alive like we always have and keep the show moving forward.
It's just a little less classy because there's no one with a British accent.
I don't know about you, Suzanne, but I bring enough class for the both of us.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
You keep telling yourself that, Zach.
Well, Suzanne, now that the preliminaries are out of the way, I kind of feel like you and I have renewed our To the Journey vows. Like we've recommitted ourselves, rededicated ourselves to the cause. So we need to dive in and talk some Voyager.
Okay.
So, Suzanne, I was pretty excited to talk about Course Oblivion. I remember this being one of my favorite Voyager episodes, but as I rewatched it again, I was actually kind of surprised how little actually happens in the episode.
I remember really liking this one as well, and really all that happened was... people melted. It was kind of disappointing when I was watching it. I was like, I thought there was more to this.
There was a lot of face melting in this episode. You're right.
Everyone's melting. What a world. It was, yeah, and everybody was slimy looking. Why were they so sweaty? Why?
Seven of Nine had this full-on Borg Queen look about her.
She did, and who else was really sweaty looking besides Seven?
Neelix was really sweaty looking.
Yeah, well, yeah, I thought he was.
And he had kind of a silver tone. He had the silver blood coming through.
He did. Like, he was distinguished. Distinguished melting Neelix. Yes.
Like, yeah, he got a buff and polish. But seriously, there really wasn't a lot to this episode, right? We had the fake Tom Bellano wedding that didn't really happen because it's not really the Voyager crew. We had a lot of face melting. We get some existential angst about whether or not these are real people, whether they're really the Voyager crew, and they're kind of crisis of identity, realizing that they're not really who they think they are. And then the episode ends and they die.
My question about Tom and Bellano, well, pseudo Tom and pseudo Bellano, what happened in their relationship that spurred them to get married 2 years before our Tom and Bellano do?
You're saying there must have been some key event.
There had to be something, and I'm curious to know what that was.
What do you think it was?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure I can find some certain fanfic about it, but I don't know.
Because that's a pretty rapid acceleration of their relationship.
It was really rapid. It would have been nice to see our Tom and B'Elanna, you know, speed it up a little along the line somewhere.
You know, there was one particular night and the astronomical phenomena were shining just so and the light was just right and they were in the mood and one thing led to another and they got married.
Okay. Sure.
Or something like that.
Or something like that, yes.
You're the fanfic writer. I don't know. Tell
that
me what
was
happens.
Years ago. Now I just read it because I don't have the time to write it anymore. I barely have the time to brush my own hair. Also, a thing that kind of niggled at my brain while I was watching it. Do people still throw rice at weddings? And in the future, are they still going to be throwing rice? Because I don't remember throwing rice for years now. We've thrown bird seed, we've blown bubbles.
That wasn't actually rice. Little known fact, that was actually Leola root seeds.
Ew. Well, I guess it's good that they were throwing them and not eating them. Yet another use for Leola root.
Seriously, though, there were a lot of fun things at this wedding. I like Tuvok's statement that when it comes to the affairs of the human heart, it's wise to look beyond logic.
Of course he was going to talk about logic. He's Tuvok. What else is he going to talk about at a wedding?
But Tuvok is wise enough to know that the affairs of the human heart aren't restricted by logic.
Now, how do you think they figured out who was going to be working the wedding?
Like who served what role? Who's officiating?
Well,
who's
no,
the usher?
No,
who's
like
the...
who? There were people carrying like food. They were carrying the cake. Who's carrying the champagne? Are these people that just weren't invited to the wedding and then they had to work it?
And who's manning the bridge?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Someone's got to be driving
Naomi,
the ship.
Naomi, I guess.
They left Naomi in charge.
Well, it's better than leaving Harry in charge. You can't do that.
They gave Naomi a booster chair and the captain's chair.
And where were the rest of the Kimtones?
That's a good question.
It was Harry and a random dude.
Maybe they were steering the ship.
And they were serving the champagne and carrying the cake, which was not enough cake to feed all those people that were there.
One of the other things I really loved about this is seeing Seven of Nine catch the bouquet. Like, she's next in line to get married. To Harry Kim, apparently, according to B'Elanna. She asked Seven of Nine, what about Harry Kim?
I know. Right? I was like, ew, why did you ask that? What about the doctor?
Is it me, or did that just seem to come out of nowhere?
It came out of nowhere.
She says, well, how about Harry Kim? Like, was that supposed to pick up on something that I missed at the wedding? Like, did he catch the garter or something?
Yeah, we didn't see any of that. It's like they left immediately after the wedding. Did they go back for the reception? And why did they leave since the reception was clearly in the same room where they had the wedding?
I'm thinking the only way for that comment to make sense is that if Harry Kim caught the garter and that was like a deleted scene or something.
And, well, I don't think B'Elanna was even wearing a garter because she was wearing slacks.
Well,
that would make getting to the garter a little difficult. In a public forum. And maybe that's why it was a cut scene.
That's what they do in the 24th century. They just beam the garter out.
What?
Energize.
Isn't the whole point of getting the garters to be a little risque? If you're just beaming it out, then just don't do it to begin with.
So you're saying that's a tradition that's gone by the wayside in the...
If you're wearing slacks, I'm going to say yes.
So that comment just seemed to come out of nowhere. Like, why did she mention Harry Kim?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows Harry Kim was crushing on Seven for a while.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
So maybe that's all it was.
I like how Seven came back and was clearly, literally, no.
Poor Harry. No.
In so many words, no. Yeah.
And speaking of Seven, it was fun to see her take charge of engineering while B'Elanna was going to be on her honeymoon.
Well, who else was going to do it? Were they going to dig up Joe Carey from wherever the heck they buried him? Because he should have been in charge, but he was nowhere to be found.
No, fake Joe Carey could have done it.
Fake?
Right, because these aren't the real crew. This is fake B'Elanna and fake 709 and fake Joe Carey.
Obviously, they don't care about Joe Carey either on the fake ship because he's... I guess, scrubbing plasma manifold somewhere, instead of being second in command in engineering like he should be. There's no love for Joe Carey in any ship, real or fake.
And even though this isn't the real B'Elanna, it's kind of fun to see how much B'Elanna has become involved with her role as chief engineer. Like she's like this overprotective mother trying to baby her engines.
She's very Scotty in that aspect.
Yeah, she's like a helicopter mom with her warp core.
It's like, no, you have to understand its moods. It has moods.
You have to talk to it. Tell it it's a good warp core.
It's a pretty warp core. And pet it.
It's parallel to that discussion with Worf and Data when Worf takes over.
Exactly, Spot.
Looking after Spot. Exactly. It's like, I will feed him. He's like, I will maintain the warp core.
So warp cores are like cats. If you learn anything else from this podcast, that is what you need to know.
They both purr.
They do. And they can both be fractious if you don't treat them right.
Some people have been known to put on the warp core sounds as like background sound effects.
That's true.
Like when you're concentrating or going to sleep at night.
So now you all know how Zach goes to sleep at night.
To the purring sounds of a warp core. Okay, but speaking about B'Elanna's honeymoon, isn't it weird that Tom wants to take her to the Roaring Twenties in Chicago on the honeymoon? What is with that?
That is all Tom. Like, B'Elanna gets no say in the honeymoon whatsoever. It's what Tom wants. So pretty much she's just going to go along with it to make him happy.
Speakeasies and prohibition and Al Capone shooting at you sounds like a relaxing honeymoon to me.
Yes.
But is this kind of a giveaway that this isn't actually really Tom? Like, real Tom wouldn't actually take B'Elanna to a honeymoon on the holodeck in the 20s in Chicago?
Well, it was an immediate giveaway during the wedding when Captain Janeway referred to them both as lieutenants, because our Tom, just a few weeks earlier, had been demoted to ensign.
That's right. I forgot that there's that tell inside the episode. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I totally, you know, to this day, it's so subtle that I still don't pay attention to it. I didn't pay attention to it this time when I rewatched it either, even though I knew that already. Oh, yeah, that little subtle thing that no one noticed. It's brilliant, actually. That's a great little tell. It is.
One thing that really bugs me is, who the heck is Ensign Harper? We've never heard this person's name before. We never hear them again. But apparently, on this ship, they have a baby.
That's a good question.
So why is this Ensign Harper allowed to have children? But on our Voyager, nobody until after Niobe, nobody until Maral was born. What the heck is with that?
I gotta say, though, this silver blood stuff, this deuterium-based whatever they're made of that I never fully understand.
The goo.
It's pretty clever stuff. It's biomimetic, but it's so convincing that it's created what are essentially real life forms that can reproduce and make things and function just like ordinary life forms, but eventually will decay. It's pretty sophisticated stuff if two biomimetic life forms can have a very convincing biomimetic baby.
It made a ship, an actual yes, ship, that can replicate things.
Is the ship one of these life forms?
Or many of them, I guess. The ship is kind of huge for it to be just one life form. It's kind of nutty.
So you're thinking that whatever the ship is made of, this biomimetic stuff, whether one life form or many, is kind of like the Link in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
With the changelings.
Yeah.
They've merged together and formed Voyager. So that's kind of weird. I mean,
they're like Legos. One Lego joins another and another and another to make a giant ship.
I just think it's kind of weird that, I mean, Voyager's already a little conscious with the bioneural gel packs, I guess, right? But this is, Voyager, it's got to be made of something. Like, you know, so what's the difference between the conscious goo that makes up the crew and the unconscious goo that makes up the ship?
Oh, maybe they're like Wonder Twins. Did you ever watch that cartoon? Wonder Twins?
I did not.
Form of, whatever, and shape of, where they could change what they were. Well, anyone that's watched Wonder Twins will understand what I'm saying.
So they're shapeshifters. They're shapeshifting twins.
Yes. But okay. One usually ends up as a bucket of water. I don't know why.
That's right. Odo sleeps in a bucket.
There you go. It's the circle of life.
I just think it's odd that this biomimetic stuff is so convincing that, like, down to the cellular level, it replicates a genuine life form.
It is interesting.
It's weird.
But then you could also scan for it and see that it's there, the deuterium and all that other mumbo jumbo that the doctor rattled off when he was scanning B'Elanna. Surely during the however many months that they've been traveling. Someone has gone to sick bay for some reason and had to be scanned. Wouldn't you have seen it then?
No. It's the extra special medical tricorder setting that lets you see that.
I always forget about that extra special setting.
It wouldn't show up in an ordinary scan.
You have to ask for it. I need that special one.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask, Suzanne, this whole idea of having a duplicate is interesting. Suppose you found out that you were not yourself. You were, in fact, a duplicate. Or maybe by extension, maybe you met your duplicate. A slightly different question. What a strange idea that would be. What kind of sort of personal identity crisis would that spawn? I think it's interesting to see the difference between Tom's reaction to that scenario and, say, Captain Janeway and Harry's reaction to that scenario. Because Harry's okay with it. He's like, I'm still pretending I'm in Starfleet. Captain Janeway is still my captain, even though she's not really Captain Janeway, and I'm okay with it. And Captain Janeway's like, this is still my ship. It's still my crew. I'm still the captain in my mind. And this is the only person I know how to be. And Harry's like, I'm done with this. You're not really my captain. This is not really my ship. I'm not even really Tom. So to heck with it.
I would definitely be in with Tom's frame of mind thinking that. It's like, okay, I thought I was this one person, but now I really know that I'm goo. Why do I have to continue on to the Alpha Quadrant, which isn't my home? Why am I even trying to get there? I just want to go back home. My wife died.
Tom's like, you don't get to tell me what to do, Captain Janeway.
Who are we to listen to her?
Set course to oblivion.
Demon planet. Away.
Yeah, actually, it was Tom that came up with the title of this episode. Course Oblivion.
It sounds like it should be a Captain Proton episode.
This week on Captain Proton, Course Oblivion. No, Tom gets a little whiny there. He's like, you don't get to tell me what to do, Captain Janeway. You're not really my captain.
His wife just died. He just found out he's not who he thought he was.
So you're saying cut fake Tom some slack?
Yeah. Dude didn't even get to go on his honeymoon, which was all his honeymoon.
But usually it's Harry Kim doing all the whining, and Harry Kim basically gets to tell Tom to man it up this time.
Well, Harry did some whining in this one. Harry even forgot he was carrying the ring. Hello, lousy best man, what are you doing? Had to get reminded by the captain, ensign the ring.
Harry.
So you're saying you would react more like Captain Janeway? Is that what you're going towards? Or somewhere in the mid zone, somewhere?
I'd like to think so, because even if you're fundamentally a pool of biomimetic goo, you're still doing what you're doing, and things still matter, and there's still meaning in life. I mean, Tom's having kind of an existential crisis here, and I kind of get that. But I feel like, you know, if that's who you are in the moment and what you're doing, even if you're kind of a duplicate, then things still matter, and you need to make the most of it. I think I'd be a little more in the Harry/Janeway camp, honestly. But I do feel like, actually, I think in a really interesting way, this episode is an interesting metaphor for life. I feel like so many times in life, people have to fake it until they make it. Like, you get a new job, you're in a new situation, you're in a new town, a new city, new career, new whatever, and you're not acclimated yet. Mm-hmm. And you have to just fake it until you make it. And it's almost like any new situation you're in, that you have to be that imposter for a while until you adjust. And that's the situation the crew is in here. They essentially have to fake it until they make it. They're not really the Voyager crew, but they look like them and they think like them and they have to figure it out. They have to be imposters and fake it until they make it.
But they're not going to make it because they're melting and the ship is falling apart and they need to go back to the demon planet. But Captain Janeway is thinking she's Captain Janeway. Let's go to the Alpha Quadrant. No, your entire crew is going to die. Turn around.
Chakotay gives her quite a talking to.
He does. And then he dies. So never be the voice of reason, because I guess you're going to die then. Yeah, there wasn't enough Chakotay in this episode for me. And melting Chakotay was not pleasant to look at.
It was strangely emotional to see all of our favorite characters die in the course of the episode. Even though it's just the fake characters.
We didn't get to see Tuvok die.
No, I guess we didn't. Why does Harry Kim get to be acting captain if Tuvok didn't die?
Well, I think Tuvok was dead at that point. We just don't get to see it.
Oh, okay. I understand. So Tuvok was already gone, but off screen, off camera.
Yeah, there wasn't much of melting Tuvok at all, if any. Now I can't remember if he was melty or not. He must have been. Everybody else was melty.
I did rewatch the episode, but I don't honestly remember.
I know. I just watched this a few hours ago, and I'm like, I just know that he wasn't there anymore.
I'm glad your memory for details of episodes is about as good as mine.
Meaning horrible. Yes.
Pretty terrible. Yeah. But you got to admit, this was quite a good promotion for Harry. He went straight from ensign to acting captain.
And then he died.
And then he died, like everyone in the episode.
So what you learn is don't make Harry captain because everybody will die.
That's pretty much what happens the entire episode. Such and such happens to this character, and then they died.
Even the little beacon with all their memories and everything got jammed, and it died. Why did that thing get destroyed? Just because it got jammed doesn't mean it should have, you know, like, self-destructed.
Well, it was falling apart like everything else. Like,
no, it was made, like, from components they had picked up along the journey.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they must have picked up all kinds of stuff if they were able to put a whole memory device together. Yeah.
So why did it self-destruct? That makes no sense to me.
In my headcanon, the miners that were defending their planet destroyed it.
Okay. But I'll go with that.
Yeah, it's an explanation.
We know that faux Voyager is ahead of real Voyager because of their enhanced warp drive that made everybody melt. Where did they get the technology for the advanced warp drive? Was that something the goo people already had?
I don't think the goo people had it. They must have picked it up on their slightly different journey.
And then if they were stopping and picking things up along the way, don't you think our Voyager would have run into someone that had already come across their path?
Someone who would have said, not
hey,
you guys.
Hey, you
again.
Look familiar. Captain Janeway, how you been? And she'd stand there like, what are you talking about?
You were just here last week.
No.
No, I wasn't.
I mean, they would have had to have run across somebody.
Unless for some reason they were on different trajectories, like took a different path. One went right, the other went left.
So by going right, you whiz ahead of real Voyager by months. And you're almost 2 years away from home.
Sure, they rode a spatial eddy current.
With their enhanced warp drive.
No, you're right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's too big of a time gap for it to make a lot of sense, yeah. Right? But they couldn't have been too far ahead because Voyager got back to check out faux Voyager pretty quickly.
But they were heading back towards the demon planet using their enhanced warp drive. Which I want to know more about.
They got back just as fast as they went forward. Got it. No, I don't think they say where they got it, right? In the episode.
Just that it's an enhanced warp drive. That doesn't really tell you much.
Maybe fake B'Elanna is just that much cleverer than real B'Elanna and she invented it.
And going back to the ship. When they're on their way back towards the demon planet and they're trying to get a hold of Voyager and they decide, hey, let's dump the core. Wouldn't you warn everyone that you're doing that? Because remember, Neelix is walking through the mess hall, taking care of people. He's got a tray full of stuff. They dump the core and he's like thrown off his feet. You should give people a little heads up. Hey, brace yourselves.
But Seven of Nine has a pretty good sense of balance because she just stands there in engineering right next to the warp core when he ejects. Cool as a cucumber. And how exactly does this work? Like, does a force field go up so they can eject the warp core? You know, without all the oxygen rushing out of the room, that kind of thing?
I think so. Although when B'Elanna dumped the core, she got everybody out of engineering and the door shut behind her because she almost did a Geordi barrel roll.
Right, but Seven of Nine didn't do a barrel roll. No isolation door, she just stands there.
Seven doesn't need oxygen, I guess. And she doesn't get thrown off her feet.
I actually love when they eject the warp core because you know it's a bad day on the ship when they eject the warp core. In fact, Voyager in general is having a pretty bad week. I love the shots of Voyager getting all sort of wishy-washy and falling apart and looking all fluid like it's about to fly apart at the seams.
It kind of reminded me of how it looked in Twisted.
Yeah, it's a really cool digital effect. And now we just take those things for granted. Of course they do special effects like that, but that was really new in the 90s. That was a really cool thing to see. Actually, you know that Cargo Bay 2 in particular was having a bad day? You know how you can tell? Because it needed to decompress.
Oh, yay, dad joke.
I warned you I was going to have more dad jokes for you.
No!
Cargo Bay 2 was having a bad day. It needed to decompress.
Saying it a second time doesn't make it any funnier.
What do you think about Neelix being promoted to quote-unquote chief medical officer?
He still thought it was more important to be morale officer. That should tell you something right there. He's not fit for duty.
And why doesn't Tom get to be?
Because Tom died. That's why they needed a new one.
Oh, was Tom already dead then? That's right. Oh, sorry. I totally forgot. Order of operations. Yep. Never mind. Scratch that. I forget who dies when in this. So many people die.
It's like, who died when? I can't remember. Sometimes it's not mentioned. And
that's why Neelix needed to take over the job. Exactly. Okay.
How do you think our crew would have reacted had the capsule full of all of the files and away missions and personal logs had that not been destroyed?
See, that is the kind of stuff, as much as I love Voyager, that's the kind of stuff that I wish they would have done. Like, why can't the real Voyager find all the logs and have some sort of interesting conundrum, a meeting of the minds, having to digest the information? We don't get to see any of that because the memory device was destroyed.
Yeah.
I would have been a lot more interesting. That's the ending I would have made.
And they would have had the enhanced warp drive, so they would have gotten home faster. That's probably why they didn't do it. Well, there we go. I ended the show two years too soon. That's why. But imagine Tom and B'Elanna reading, "Hey, we got married." Seriously?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Maybe that could have been the beginning of their relationship.
Yeah, that could have spurred them into action. In some serious sense.
Yeah. Exactly. That would make a lot of sense. I can picture it now. B'Elanna's like, "Now that I've read these logs, Tom, real Tom, I see you in a new light."
Why can't you be more like fake Tom?
Except for that honeymoon thing. I don't want to do the Roaring Twenties in Chicago.
She might want to do that if you give her like a Tommy gun and she gets to fight the gangsters. So then we could have, instead of like they had in TOS, it was a piece of the action. We could have a Voyager, like a piece of the action, but it's Tom and B'Elanna's honeymoon.
With a Tommy gun.
You can find a picture of Spock with a Tommy gun.
But Tom with a Tommy gun is funny.
It's hilarious. Someone needs to Photoshop that, like, right now.
Tom with his Tommy gun?
It's truly a Tommy gun.
I don't know. I still think in a strange way this episode is a deep metaphor. Like, as you get older, people around you die and things fall apart and your body decays and you got to kind of come to terms with all of that. And that's exactly what happens in a microcosm in this episode, right? All their friends die and they're decaying and their ship is falling apart around them all in the space of like
this
a week.
This sounds awful.
It's a metaphor for life.
How old are you, Zach, that you're falling apart already?
Oh, man, I'm going to be 40 this year. Don't remind me. I know 40 is not what it used to be. I mean, I thought my dad looked ancient when he was 40. I don't think I look ancient yet, but I feel like everyone in this episode sometimes. I look into myself in the mirror and go, oh, I'm falling apart.
Yeah, I feel that way after the baby's gotten me up a few times during the night. My face is definitely melting by the morning. I'm like, I can't go on.
And you were sick in the last few days, so.
Which made it even more fun.
You did have that clammy, slimy appearance.
I was very sweaty, yes.
So you think I'm reaching here a little bit, that this is not a gigantic metaphor for aging and life and decay?
No, I can see how some people would think that, but I try not to think of me decaying. That's very depressing. I don't want to go there.
I guess that's the part of the episode I find most interesting. Not necessarily the decay literally or the aging literally, but I think I find the existential anxiety in this episode interesting. Like, you know, who am I really? I'm not really who I think I am. Life's falling apart around me and I've got to figure out what that means. I think that's really interesting.
And no matter what you do, you'll be forgotten.
Yes. That's what happens to most people, honestly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Most people are just forgotten.
Now I'm like really depressed, Zach. Thank you.
No problem. That's what we do here on To the Journey.
At least we have these podcasts. Someone will remember us, I hope.
Really, though, I'm being a little reflective about aging and life. Like, people do have this inclination to want to leave something of themselves behind, just like the fake Voyager crew wants to leave their memories and their logs and their records and in a little time capsule. That's a natural instinct. And as I get older, I think I feel that impulse more and more to leave something important behind, even if it's only 150 podcast episodes I've done, right? That's at least something of myself to leave behind if I, you know, keel over next week.
But don't keel over next week.
And we'll be doing a TTJ soliloquy.
All by myself.
You'd be like, I kind of miss Zach's dad jokes.
Oh, and Kay's lovely British accent.
See, I can't do that because every time I do a British accent, I can't emulate Kay. I just sound like Julia
Childs. And I sound like Dick Van Dyke, and then I would get, you know, crap from her about that. So I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it.
So no, you're saying no fake Kay accents here on the new To the Journey?
No.
Okay. The rule has been established. Honestly, I was a little disappointed in this episode this time around. It's been a while since I've watched it, and I remember it being a bit more riveting than it actually is. Really, not a lot happens in the episode. Face melting, people die, Voyager falls apart. That's it. The episode over.
I think we're jaded because we go into it knowing this isn't our crew. I mean, I can kind of remember the first time I saw it thinking, yeah, this is them, because I didn't pick up on the lieutenant thing. And then just being in shock. These aren't my people. But now I'm going into it because I've seen it like 10 times.
It is a shocking moment, I guess, when Captain Janeway dies. Like, oh my God, Captain Janeway's dead.
Again.
Because you haven't had the grand, you haven't had the grand reveal. And I do love the moment when they cut to real Voyager and the bridge is all illuminated, mm-hmm. and, you know, everything's back to normal. I think that's a great transition, between the contrast of the dimly lit Voyager that's falling apart and the real Voyager that's in good shape.
Yeah. Then they show up and it's just goo in space.
It is, I guess, I forgot that that's supposed to be an emotional moment when fake Captain Janeway dies. I don't feel anything now because I know it's fake Captain Janeway.
I do remember being a little upset when fake Chakotay died. So I was like, no, not Chakotay!
Not fake Chakotay.
And now it's like, fake Chakotay.
I love that even fake Chakotay didn't want to keep going towards the Alpha Quadrant. He's like, can't we just find a planet to set down on? He's always saying that.
He just
even fake Chakotay.
Well, he's the same as real Chakotay. He has the same memories. He's just not made of blood. He's made of goo.
That is actually a really interesting question. So they're not made of the same material. They're made of this biomimetic goo stuff, right? So, but clearly this, whatever has happened with this biomimetic goo has organized itself, structured itself in the same structure as normal matter, right? And as normal biomatter, right? There's cells and there's neurons, but it's just all made of different stuff. But the fact that it's all arranged in the same way as the real matter, real biomatter, seems to have produced similar states of consciousness as real matter would. I think that's really an interesting idea that, you know, even with different pieces, you put them together in the right way and you get consciousness that emerges very similar to what real matter would produce.
Yeah. So I'm guessing when one of them was injured, they'd actually bleed a blood-looking substance instead of the goo that they were made of? Because that would have been a giveaway, too. If somebody got injured, went to sick bay, and they're bleeding the metallic goo, the doctor would be like, something's wrong here.
See, the Next Generation did this joke first, granted, but prick me, do I not leak?
Oh, I totally set you up for a dad joke there. That's just wrong.
Data made that joke first, I guess. Well, it's kind of like in Deep Space Nine when they do the, when Martok does the cutting the hand test to see if everyone's a changeling. He pulls out the Klingon knife and slices his hand and drips blood on the table. How come we didn't have a silver blood dripping moment in Voyager? But Lana whips out her Klingon knife, slices her hand, puts it over the conference table, and silver goo drips out. That would have been cool. One thing that doesn't make sense to me is that there seems to be different rates of decay for different parts of the ship and different things in the ship. Like, some things seem to decay really quickly, and the conference room looks all sparkly shiny still, while everything in the room is decaying. It's kind of weird that some of the ship is decaying faster than others. Maybe is it like a surface area to volume problem?
Well, just like some of the people were decaying faster than others. Like, Chakotay and the captain look really bad, but Tom was okay. He just had like a little shimmer on one cheek.
What accounts for the difference? They don't say, but I want to know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was the age of the goo. Maybe some of the goo was younger than other parts of the goo.
So it's not just that the fake people are aging and look weird. Some of the goo is actually older.
Yes!
That's deep, Suzanne. Even the goo feels old. Other than the fact that they're dehumanizing, they're turning back into this goo, or, well, I guess they're not just turning back into the goo, right?
They're dying.
Disintegrating. So they need to get back to that demon planet. Otherwise, they're going to disintegrate. But if they'd made it back to the demon planet, would they have survived?
They don't know. They just thought that that was their best chance for survival. I mean, at this point, they were breathing air and oxygen and stuff.
Well, they were fake breathing because they weren't real people, right?
But wasn't the demon planet a different atmosphere? And the goo lived in a different atmosphere? And, like, people couldn't breathe that. They would choke and die.
So had they passed the point of no goo return?
No goo return.
Where they couldn't return to the demon planet and go back to their goo state and be happy in their 500 degree Celsius
environment? I don't think they could, like, re-goo or dehumanize and become the goo again. I don't think they could do that.
So they were goo gone. Really fantastic makeup job, though. It was pretty convincing. Yeah. Slimy goo on these people, right?
I saw a lot of the edges, so I was not happy with this makeup.
See, I didn't look at it that carefully, I guess.
I don't even have to look at it carefully. I went to school for that, so I just sort of zero in.
Really? Yeah. How did I not know that about you? You went to school for what? Cosmetology or cosplay?
No, it was actually special effects makeup.
Really? Where did you do this? Give your alma mater a shout out.
Joe Blasco Makeup Academy.
Wow. That's really interesting.
That was a long time ago. So long ago.
So every time I'm like, wow, that was pretty cool makeup, you're like, oh, please, amateur.
No, it was good. It was just, it wasn't on par with something like Threshold, where they were, as much as I despise that episode, they were amazing with the makeup on that episode.
One thing that was a little strange about the makeup is that just how plasticized their faces seemed to be. It seemed to render their faces immobile. Like they couldn't emote, their mouths couldn't move, their faces couldn't move.
Yeah, I'm guessing they didn't use silicone, which in the 90s wasn't used as much as it is nowadays. I mean, silicone, it'll move with your face. I'm guessing they just used latex appliances, which kind of, it's more plasticky and it doesn't move. It doesn't allow you to emote anything, which is why when Captain Janeway's half of her mouth is kind of fused shut, she really can't talk as well.
In a way, it kind of aided the creepy weirdness of it, but it didn't make for great emoting.
Yeah.
Well, Suzanne, I think at the end of the day, my verdict on this episode is I remember really enjoying it, and I still kind of do enjoy it, but it's actually kind of boring, but I still like it anyway.
Yeah, mainly because you know what's going to happen. They're not going to be remembered. They're just going to disintegrate into goo in space. And
it's fun to see fake Tom and Bolano wedding. It's fun to see fake Captain Janeway die. It's supposed to be emotional, but I've kind of lost the emotional impact of that at this point.
That, and we get to see some of the crew at the wedding in their dress uniform.
Is that a good thing?
It was interesting.
We don't get to see the dress uniforms all that much. Well, there was the one episode when they're hosting the dignitary or the ambassador from another planet, someone to watch over me, I think, right? There's the ambassador.
Was that before or after visiting,
and they get dressed. I can't remember off the top of my head. We could look it up, but I'm not going to do that right now, right? It's in there somewhere, right? But it's not the only time we've seen them in the dress uniforms. Might have been the first, though. I'm not sure about that.
And then why were only some of the wedding guests in the dress uniforms and not all of the wedding guests? That's kind of rude.
Didn't have enough time to make it work. Dressing down at 24th century weddings. casual Fridays. Well, Suzanne, even though we are now 2 of 3, it's great to be back doing To the Journey, and it was fun to talk about Course Oblivion today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
This episode is one of those tropes, like, why is Jack the Ripper something that just completely still captivates us in storytelling?
It's interesting. People are always obsessed. Like, you always see some new documentary on the History Channel, like, we found the new Jack the Ripper. Was Jack the Ripper a woman? Was Jack the Ripper a political figure? Was he a part of the royal family? It's like, do we care at this point?
The 602 Club.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I love the fact that the theme of PTSD carries through. And the very first thing that they do is they throw at you, they double underline, circle, and bold the point that revenge doesn't chase the demons away.
Earl Grey.
I dragged him over to Seth MacFarlane, who I'd never met before, and I said, so you're a big Star Trek Next Gen fan? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, I'm Lieutenant Commander Shelby. And he looked at me and he went, that means you're Elizabeth Denny. I suppose that's why someone like you sits in the shadow of a great man, passing off one command after he started saying all of my lines to me. And we started doing all of our scenes and lines. Isn't that hilarious?
Warp 5.
The Guardians are the Borg.
That's it. The Guardians are the Borg.
Tune in later on. We might talk about it.
Let's write that episode together.
Right. See, but the thing is that these sphere builders, though, like they must think of themselves as the guardians of the galaxy.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party podcast apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it'll come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose message to a trek.fm show and select to the journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm, and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Zach, when you're not hanging out in 1920s Chicago with your Tommy gun, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there, and you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And how about you, Suzanne? When you're not serving as maid of honor at Fake Tom and Fake Bellana's wedding, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me popping in the Babel Conference every now and again. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network through Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we have a few people to thank. First off being C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, who is also the original biomimetic life form. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shamatella, our Patreon manager.
You're saying Chris is the founder, in quotes.
Yes. Also, very big thank you to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau.
Well, unbeknownst to you listeners, this has not been real Zachary and real Suzanne podcasting tonight. This has been fake Zachary and fake Suzanne podcasting. So join us next time when real Zachary and real Suzanne will be back with you. But until then, this has been To the Journey.